Guys, as you know, for the last year or so, or last year, I was living in England, Northern England.
Hold on.
How did you manage to do the podcast so much?
You were living in England?
You know, it was the kindness of co-hosts.
Mm. Do they have internet over there?
Yeah.
Not great.
Yeah, but it's fiber, but the order of the R and the E may surprise you.
I hear that people drive by in a truck and try to figure out how much internet you're using and then charge you for it. Is that true?
You have to have a license for your computer.
Yeah.
So I'm living in England and I'm loving it, but I notice a marketing campaign for Magic the Gathering Hot Pockets.
Oh, yes.
Let me tell you, they don't have Hot Pockets in England. They don't need them. They have pies. They have steak and meat pies instead.
Mm-hmm. Like at every pub, right? You just go to the bar and you get yourself a steak and meat pie.
Dude, that's literally true. Yes. And today I'm at the grocery store and I'm buying my son some fish fingers. And what do I see in the frozen food aisle is Magic the Gathering Hot Pockets. And I say, aha, now's my chance. Since not only this, you guys, I've never had a Hot Pocket.
Oh, what?
I've just never had a Hot Pocket. Yeah.
Hmm. Are they filled with like a Johnny meat?
Ham and cheese.
Beefcake so, yeah. For Gideon.
So I buy a box of Hot Pockets, of ham and cheese Hot Pockets with Vivian on the cardboard. And I bring them home and I can't wait to get some exclusive arena content for eating a Hot Pocket. And first of all, it makes you jump through a million hoops to get this arena content. You have to take a picture of your receipt and submit it to a Hot Pockets MTG website is the first hoop.
Mark Rosewater himself reviewing every receipt.
That's just step one.
Step two is you have to have done this before June 2023.
Oh, I see.
That's a while ago.
Yeah. So I just ended up with these lousy Hot Pockets. They were fine, actually. I didn't mind it, but...
Did they have the crisper pack? Did they have the crisper?
That little metallic rectangle?
They do have the little metallic rectangle, but I don't own a microwave. I only own an oven and an air fryer.
Oh. Then you're great. You're golden.
Oh.
You're golden.
I bet you they were amazing in that air fryer, I bet.
I mean, yeah, it was fine. It was fine. It wasn't as good as a steak pie.
Can I take you guys further into the least interesting open we've ever had right now? Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever tried to buy a microwave oven?
Oh,
you guys
sure.
Ever tried to buy one?
I have bought one, yeah.
Like Dire Straits, you mean?
Yeah, that isn't a countertop one.
Oh.
So no, ours I don't think is so. Ours is cabinet mounted.
Oh, okay.
And it is unbelievably difficult to find something that fits in the hole that already exists. It's like that lady with the thing, like every shape. I'm just going to put the wrong shape in the hole, you know?
The what? Triangle goes into the round hole.
Exactly.
Get yourself a microwave oven.
David, get yourself over to Apt in Glenview.
I thought about it, but they charge like $150 extra for every single thing.
But once you actually talk to the person at Apt, to the sales rep at Apt in Glenview, they'll take prices down. You can negotiate with Apt in Glenview.
Okay.
And when you go, hey, when you go, let me know, because I love visiting Apt. And I'll bring my child. He loves it there, too.
When you go, make sure you say that the Dive Down sent you too.
The Dive Down sent me. And they'll say, what was that?
Hello and welcome to episode 269 of the Dive Down, a Magic the Gathering podcast focused on the latest decks, trends, and strategies for the casual spike. My name is Stanislav here in Chicago. And with me on the line from Denver, Colorado, it's the one and only Shane Beeps. Shane, happy April Fool's Day.
Oh, yeah, it is. You know what's funny? Okay, so April Fool's Day, my birthday is in April, but I don't want people knowing my real birthday. So I put April 1st as my birthday on like all the sign-up things. So I get all like the emails for happy birthday, you know, various forum name, happy birthday, Shane, on April 1st. It's great.
You don't want people knowing your real birthday.
No, they're going to like send me marketing advertisements for like Aries or something.
Well, see, if you do that and then you forget for a couple of years, later down the road, you maybe forget and you're like, wait, why are these people, are they just sending me April Fool's jokes to emails?
Yeah, I'm glad I avoided most of the April Fool's jokes. I will say, one game I do play, they put a chest in your inventory that when you opened it, just made more chests until you got the right chest. It was very comedic.
I mean, that's pretty good. My wife told my children that they were going to have to go to summer school this year for April Fool's, because my older son said, give us an April Fool's joke and make it good and big. And first we tried to tell him he was going to have sushi for dinner. And he said, I know what you're doing. This isn't big enough. So then a half hour later, my wife told the children that they had to go to summer school. And there was almost tears. And then she said, April.
He asked for it.
And I was still like, this is too much. I was like, this has gone too far.
Now I understand why when I logged into the Dive Down Twitter account this morning, I was met with balloons. And it also says happy birthday on our profile. Because you set up our Twitter account. Oh, yeah,
that's
our
birthday, yes. That's the birthday.
Wow.
That's the birthday of the Dive Down.
That's funny.
And the birthday of the Dive Down is what? Somewhere around like October, November?
December.
It is December.
Real, no, we started.
Yeah,
we our first episode, but the plan, the nascent idea, somewhere probably September, October range.
Yeah, of like 2010, we were talking about it for years, mate. First of all, hold on. We can't celebrate the Dive Down birthday unofficially without the Godfather, Dave Harbarger. Hi, Dave.
Somebody's poisoned the water hole.
And that may have been the one and only Doomwake, aka Devin O'Donnell.
No, I would never do that.
There's a snake in my boot.
Is there?
Is this doing it for you? Reach for the sky.
You're my favorite deputy.
To infinity and beyond.
That's the wrong genre.
Is that the wrong guy?
Yeah. That's the unset. That's infinity.
Right.
To infinity and beyond.
You know what's not an April Fool's joke? The wonderful accessories at Heavy Play. It's no joke. These are really, really good. They're play mats. Their deck boxes, their card sleeves, all feature enhanced ergonomics for mobility and protection, and their unique Equip Mag system. You're going to think I'm pranking you. I'm not pranking you. It allows you to magnetically attach your dice bundles to your deck boxes, carry it all in one hand on your playmat. It's real. I've done it. You'll love it too.
Stanislav, you can't fool me. This product sounds too good to be true. This is April Fool's.
I would never lie to you, Shane. I don't celebrate the Liar's Day.
I use plastic deck boxes. They just snap together, and sometimes the exterior coating falls off.
Shane, I want you to try the Heavy Play accessory so much. I'm going to get you a 10% discount off your first order at heavyplay.com. All you have to do is use promo code thedivedown2024.
Okay. I'll do it. I'll trust you on this one, but if you're fooling me, Stan, another uncooked red snapper straight to your mailbox.
Reach for the sky.
All right, on this week's show, we're saddling up for a trip to Thunder Junction.
Mm-hmm. Partner.
You get a cowboy hat upon arrival through the Omen Path. Also, the cactus are not people.
Some are.
Not officially, not canonically.
Oh. Guess we know what magic's about. Is it going to be about the struggle of cacti that aren't people?
I hope not. I'm not ready for that.
I mean, the set just looks like a giant jamboree to me. Just people coming out of the woodwork.
Today, we're going to chat about our feelings on some of the new mechanics introduced in OTJ.
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 Yeah. OTJ.
I love Odyssey, their Torment, second Judgment album.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're starting to run out of three-letter. There's only so many three-letter combinations that we have, right?
We're going to recap some of the hype from the initial standouts from the set, and then probably bicker over some personal favorites that caught our attention. But first...
We never do that. We don't do that on spoiler episodes.
You know what we also do, though, sometimes, is read the housekeeping, Shane.
Okay. We've got new patrons. We've got Sven L, Stephen C, Paul DC. Does this include our like brand new arrivals as of like yesterday or today, Stanislav?
They should do. I checked the Fireside, I checked the Patreon earlier today.
Well, Fireside, get at us for that free advertising for your podcast hosting service. But yes, we have three new patrons. Thank you, all three of you, for becoming citizens of the Dive Down Nation. If you want to be like these folks, head on over to patreon.com/thedivedown. You help keep us going. You get to enjoy access to the awesome community of folks on our Discord. You get some swag sent your way. By the way, I know that I owe some folks some swag that is coming out after the March patronage stuff gets cemented, then I can send everything out that's owed early in April. So trust me, it's coming. if you don't want to do a Patreon thing, if you just want to do a one time, get some swag, get in and out, and throw a few dollars our way through that, you can go to our store, which is at thedivedown.com/store. We've got t-shirts, we've got hats, we've got fanny packs. What else do we have? Let's see. Beanies, caps.
Beanies, shirts, fanny packs. I think that covers it all right now.
That's all you need. I mean, it's all you really need. Some cacti. Maybe you want some Zubaz pants one day.
Zubaz pants someday when we get around to it, but it's, you know.
Zubaz, get at us. If you want to rent Magic online cards, you can use Mana Traders. They work really well. We've been using them for over 269 episodes at this point. You can use the sign-up code thedivedown_K4L. I know it's very easy to remember. It's in the show notes. That's good through the end of April. And that's about it. We're talking in this intro like we don't have literally 20 pages of show notes. Most of them are card text, thankfully. So I think we should get rolling.
Yes.
Okay. So this set has what? It has cards.
Yeah.
It has mechanics.
That too.
It has colors, white, blue, black, red, green.
It has structure.
Artifacts. Yeah. It has a story people don't really love, but I don't pay attention to that.
Yeah.
Either the story nor the complaints about it. So let's get into the mechanics. Can I just start talking about
buzz these mechanics? They're all very good, but buzz them.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, okay. We've got mechanics. We've got outlaws. Some cards refer to outlaws. Outlaws are assassins, mercenary, pirates, rogues, and warlocks. I don't think this will matter for our formats, but you never know. Keep your eyes peeled for future assassin cards coming out of the Assassin's Creed set. We've got committing a crime. We've talked about committing a crime. It's just a new rules turn. It covers a range of actions, and you can kind of like get rewarded for doing these actions. Basically, as you cast a spell, activate an ability, or put a triggered ability on the stack that targets one or more of the following: an opponent, a spell or ability an opponent controls, a permanent that they control, or a card in their graveyard. That is committing a crime. So lots of cards just refer to, like, you know, if you committed a crime this turn, or like when you commit a crime this turn, things like that. So I'm sure a number of cards that we're going to talk about this episode kind of talk about committing a crime. You know what it is. Spree. Spree is like a multi-split card, but the extra spree costs are often generic mana.
I would say it's kicker, Shane.
I mean, it is kicker.
It's multi-kicker.
But it's a split card in that, like, there's different spells you can cast. It's kicker split.
It's also escalate to an extent as well.
Splitter.
But there are different effects. It's a modal split card with kicker.
And Shane hates them all, and we love them all.
Shane does hate them all.
I like this one. I like this one just fine. We'll talk about it more later. But here's like an example, okay? Like, so Final Showdown costs white. It's an instant. It has spree, three modes. Plus generic mana, all creatures lose all abilities until end of turn. Plus generic mana, choose a creature you control. It gains indestructible until end of turn. And then plus three white is destroy all creatures. So you can choose one or more of these additional costs, right? So for example, here, if you wanted to spend seven mana, 4 and 3 white, you could make a creature you control indestructible and then destroy all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So like, or you could kind of do a little dress down thing for 1 and a white. And we'll talk about that in a minute, but that's kind of an example. Do note the mana value is always the upper right-hand corner of the card, no matter what the spree cost is. So like, you could ostensibly cascade into Final Showdown in like Rhinos or something, I guess. And then you could just pay the other costs if you were so inclined.
Well, are you sure about that?
100%.
You have to pay the additional spree costs upon resolution. Yes.
Yeah, it's just like kicker.
It's on resolution. It's not on cast.
Well, it would be on cast. So if like you cascade into this, you would cast it. And then when you're cascading into it, you'd pay that additional at that time.
Yeah.
We're sure
mana
about this.
Mana value is always upper right, my dude. We've been talking about this for years.
Well, no, that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely not arguing the mana value. What I'm arguing is whether there is in fact a window where you get to select these modes when you cascade into it.
Yeah, I think it was literally in like the rules article. But feel free,
good to know,
listeners. If I'm wrong, listeners, I'm sure you'll tell me. We've got mounts and saddle. I mean, I don't even want to read this. Mount is like a new creature type that you can saddle, like a crew cost. They don't need to be saddled in order to like attack by default, unlike a vehicle, you know, most vehicles at least. And mounts typically have some kind of like saddle bonus.
It doesn't look like any of these have a power and toughness bonus of any kind when they are saddled. Maybe individually they do, but they're not related to the power of the thing that saddles them. So it's not like creatures that saddle it give this creature plus, you know, plus one, plus O, or something weird like that. It's all some kind of other effect or a better version of the effect that they have or something like that. So for example, the Gitrog, Ravenous Ride, 3 generic, black, green, for legendary creature, frog horror mount. It's a 6/5. It has trample and haste. That's that big frog that we love. And it says, whenever the Gitrog Ravenous Ride deals combat damage to a player, you may sacrifice a creature that saddled it this turn. If you do, okay, so this one has no effects if it's not saddled. If you do, draw X cards, then put up to X lands from your hand onto the battlefield tapped, where X is the sacrifice creature's power, saddle one.
Cool. That's certainly a card that's in Magic the Gathering.
Certainly one of the cards of all time.
It's a big frog. You don't want to mess that thing.
You know what?
I would sit on it.
Would you though?
Sit on the frog.
Yeah. Trample haste.
So this is a thing that exists. Keep your eyes peeled. Some of the saddle, saddle, much like crew costs, saddle costs are all over the place. So if there's a cheap saddle thing, then maybe it might be worth it. I mean, unlike vehicles, they seem to do something on their lonesome without just sitting on the battlefield. So that might be interesting. So we'll see.
They definitely do something in the sense that they are just creatures.
Yes, they are in fact creatures.
Yeah.
We have plot. A new keyword that's literally an old keyword. So you can pay a cost up front, exile a card from your hand, then the card is plotted. And then on a future turn, you may cast that plotted card from exile without paying its mana cost. They have to be a sorcery, however. Both the plotting and the casting are at sorcery speed. So maybe it's kind of like foretell. You can set up a future turn. There's even like some adventure-like creatures. Like, they have a plot effect, and then they can be cast later from exile, which is literally just adventure, just in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So,
do we know if it's... Can you have to put it face down or face up? It's face up, right?
It's face up, yeah.
It's face up unless specified, so yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, if it's face up, I mean, that's seriously just adventure.
But, I think that this mechanic is pretty cool.
It's a cool mechanic. Like
it. Yeah, like I think they've done something... This is kind of the most... playable of the mechanics, I think, that we've seen. Although I think Spree is good too, but I think that there are some reasonable cards here in plot, including not necessarily this one, but here's an example: Plan the Heist. Stan, did you have something you want to throw in before I read this example plot card?
I do think that plot is the best and most interesting mechanic, and for that reason they actually played it quite safe, that there aren't as many good plot cards as I wish there were, since it's pretty cool on the tin.
Yeah, but there are a few.
Yeah.
Plan the Heist, 2 generic blue, sorcery, surveil 3 if you have no cards in hand, then draw 3 cards. This is plot 3, colorless, and a blue. So if you plot it, you get a chance to pay a mana cost with less blue in it and also potentially set up yourself to be able to surveil next time, is basically kind of the vibe with plot here. But yeah, we'll talk more about these.
The last thing, it's not really a mechanic, but like a boatload of cards in this set have some kind of like ETB or trigger text that says, create a 1/1 red mercenary creature token with tap, target creature you control gets +1/+0 until end of turn, activate only as a sorcery. This ability triggers only once each turn. So yeah, there's a lot of cards that say that. I don't know if any of them are good.
I hate the sorcery only. I know they don't like doing combat stuff that like activated ability that messes with combat at instant speed because it messes with the newer players and limited and stuff. But activate only as a sorcery is kind of a tough sell on this one.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it's quite bad.
These tokens are not good, right? Like there could be. I didn't see a generator of tokens that was like broken. But, you know, we'll see. You never know. Something that makes extra pieces of cardboard always has a chance to be good.
Yeah, that's the thing. You do make a 1/1, even if you're not using the ability on it, I suppose. All right. Those are the mechanics and not quite mechanics. And there's a bunch of cards. And yeah, there's a lot. I think we're just going to go like Wooberg on this one, because I think we're probably only going to have one spoiler episode, y'all, because the whole set got, I feel like it got spoiled in like a very condensed time, or maybe just the timing worked as such that we couldn't do two episodes, but I think we're going to try to do this in one. We'll see how that works.
Yeah, I did like a spoiler thing on my stream last week, and at the time there was maybe 20 cards, and then a week later, basically the entire set's out, so I don't know what happened.
Boom. That's just how the window worked this time. I will say, I know that there are some people who don't like preview episodes from us, so they'll be glad that we only have a single one this time. But with that in mind, I think we will kind of keep some of these discussions short.
Yes.
So we'll go that way.
All right.
I'll read the first card.
Yeah, this might be somewhat short.
First card, Aven Interrupter, generic, white-white, creature, bird rogue, flash, flying. It's a 2-2, and it says when Aven Interrupter enters the battlefield, exile target spell. That text sounds familiar. It becomes plotted, meaning its owner may cast it as a sorcery on a later turn without paying its mana cost. Spells your opponents cast from graveyards or from exile cost 2 generic more to cast. Okay, so this is in the space, in my opinion, this is your kind of like standard power level Paolo-y card, right? Which
yes.
Is, I don't remember the name of that card that takes the card out of their hand.
Flying Paolo.
Flying Paolo. It's a hate bear, right? It is spell queller-ish, but I don't think it's as good as spell queller.
No.
Personally.
No.
And I also don't know where it lives. So I definitely noted this card and then was kind of like, all right, I'm good, but I don't think I'm going to be rushing to play it.
I think this is my first time doing a spoiler episode with Devin. And Devin, I have a question for you, your opinion.
I have an answer.
How important do you think is it to know where a card is going to live during spoiler season? And the reason I ask is because, like, I don't really think about that unless it's obvious. Like, sometimes if I just see a card that's good, like, I feel like it'll find a place to live eventually.
Like in a specific format?
No. Like, for
specific
this card,
deck is what
for this card in particular. Like okay. Dave immediately said, I don't know where it's going to go. And to me, I'm like, who cares where it ends up? Like, it's probably, it could be good enough to just end up somewhere.
I mean, the card has to be, if a card is so good that it makes a deck around it, then yes. But I feel like in Pioneer and Modern, I'm interrupting Devin. Like, in Pioneer and Modern, like, the decks are so good that I feel like the cards have to have a home.
Yeah, that's fair. I think with this card specifically, I'm not a huge fan of it because it's like they get to cast the spell for free. I mean, it's plus 2 mana, but like if they're playing, you know, some big 4 or 5 mana spell, they just get to cast it again for 2 mana the next turn. What I see the context here that I think I like about this is the second line of text, because if your opponent plays a cascade spell and you respond with this, they have to, if they don't have mana, they just can't cast their cascade spell. So maybe that's kind of the context for this, but I'm not a huge fan of it.
Yeah, just to compare it to Spellqueller or Paolo even, right? It's like this has to be played reactively and not proactively. And like the reactivity is actually like kind of worse. Like you don't get the selection and your opponent can like play around it, right? So there's just like, I think there's fewer strengths. I think like Paolo has different kinds of strengths and Spellqueller has different kinds of strengths. And this like is kind of neither for me, even though I put it on the list.
I think it's going to be really cool when someone counters a counterspell with this. You know, plotting certain reactive instant cards, I think, is what makes this actually better than Paolo and Spellqueller.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I hadn't thought about that.
But I mean, what, you're holding up a bunch of mana then. But I mean, that's reasonable. You do get to higher land counts in various games of Magic.
But also, this is what you're doing with it. Like, they can't cast the spell again until the next turn at sorcery. They're not allowed to. So I do think if you're saying, hey, I'm going to have this in my deck as a way to counteract reactive cards in a way that's better than Spellqueller, I can kind of see that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good option.
In fact, I think for that reason, it almost makes it an interesting and flexible sideboard card, where you bring it in against like a counterspell deck or a cascade style deck in other formats. I don't know if this is Modern playable, but you bring it in to like actually punish them for the spells they're casting rather than just like taxing them occasionally in game one.
Let's get to Final Showdown, which we read in the intro. That's the one that, you know, it's white,
it's
instant
the final
spree.
Showdown.
Okay. I mean, in case you skip the intro, you know, white plus one, creatures lose all abilities until end of turn, plus one, choose a creature you control gains indestructible until end of turn, plus three white, destroy all creatures, and the base cost is white. So yeah, I mean, this is expensive and interesting. I the thing that just caught my eye is like the sort of vaguely dressed down analog that's in white. Like, that's the most appealing thing to me. And everything else is kind of like, okay, some interesting bailouts or something. But the dress down in white, that's kind of like the base functionality for me.
I think the thing that gets this for me is the fact that it's an instant. So, you know, control decks typically sometimes can struggle against creature lands. So I don't know how many you would want to put in your Baby Pioneer Blue-Eyed control deck, but this going after Mutavaults and such is kind of cool.
What happens if you dress down a Mutavault?
The game crashes. Nobody knows.
Not much. Not much. I mean, if it's post attacks, I think it still gets to attack into you.
You actually get banned from this guy. Yeah, you're done.
I mean, the thing to me is, like, instant speed Wrath is, like, not that good, right? I mean, it's fine.
Especially for six mana.
But there's also...
It is six, yeah.
There also is one already in Pioneer. There's one in Theros block that's an instant speed.
Instant speed. Costs, like, seven or eight.
It costs seven, I think.
Okay. I didn't even know that.
Like, I forget what it's called.
And there's Settle, the Wreckage, too. But in a way, Settle is, I think, conditional. You know, you can only Wrath when they're attacking.
Right. It's only tapped creatures.
This is conditional as well because it costs six mana.
Yeah. I think Instant Speed Wrath looks cool. But it's, I mean, there's also, you know, this is not completely a novel effect. Like, Rout has been around for forever. Not that people have played a format that Rout is relevant in it forever. But, you know, there is one in Pioneer already.
I mean, does dress down ish in white, is that a thing? Like, that's something that's a you know, not exactly dress down, but it's a different spell, a different color. You don't have to be in blue. That could do something.
I mean, Leyline Scion is probably the best thing you could be doing in Modern right now. And if there's a white deck that didn't play blue, that didn't have that, couldn't access dress down before, I could maybe see this being a sideboard card, like Hammer Time or something.
The red white equipment deck. I want to make a comment about the six mana. I don't think that's as much of a downside these days as it used to be, because people are flashing back Memory Deluge for seven. And I think the decks that want this for the Wrath effect too can get to six mana. And they're doing stuff along the way to make your life miserable. And I just see this as like a flexible way to make people's lives miserable in a variety of different scenarios.
Yeah, I'm just curious, like, where the space is. Like, I don't think it's a main deckable card. I don't know if there's room in the sideboard, if this is specific enough or, like, surgical enough. So, I mean, I think it's interesting, for sure.
I mostly think that anybody who's going to play a six-mana Wrath would rather just play Farewell and then be able to do other stuff with the mana. You know, with the card, essentially.
All right, let's keep moving. We got, like, 30 more cards.
I want to talk about the first mount.
Okay.
On the list. Let's Fortune, Loyal Steed. 2 and a white for a legendary beast mount. When Fortune attacks while saddled, it has saddle one, by the way, and it's a 2/4. And whenever it attacks while saddled, at the end of combat, exile it and up to one creature that saddled it this turn, then return those cards to the battlefield under their opponent's or owner's control.
I didn't add this card to the list. I'm the only person that wrote about it, but I didn't add it to the list. I just wrote about it.
I certainly did not.
Shane, I think you added this to the list. Were you just not paying attention?
I might. I think I just put it there because it was like, hey, this is a... it's one of those things that people like, those blink effects.
Blinky.
So it blinks. I don't think it's particularly interesting for me, but it is another effect. It scries. Maybe. You know, who knows? Go for it.
You can saddle it with a grief.
Perfect.
I mean, I was more thinking about it when I read it with, like, mono-white humans in Pioneer. Like, maybe we're blinking a bunch of Thalia's Lieutenants and stuff with that, which is possible, but...
Extraction Specialist.
Yes.
So I thought about that kind of stuff. I mean, to get in the weeds a little bit on this card, like, I thought about, you know, is it better to blink your... Like, in a deck like, you know, an aggressive Humans-y style deck or something that's going to play like Thraben Inspector or something like that, it's like, sure, we could be blinking those, but is that the value you're actually getting out of them? Or is it really just the fact that you're getting two pieces of cardboard and you can blow them up with, like, your, you know, your shrapnel creature maker type thing? And, you know, I mean, I think that there's potential there, but I don't think I'm not like going after Fortune Loyal Steed in my spec binder or something.
I think it's important to ask yourself, is it better to have blinked and lost or never to have blinked at all?
Yeah, true.
It's the real question.
I mean, I guess I can just keep reading. Feel free to jump in, my friends.
I could take a couple if you want.
Yeah, let's do this High Noon card that I don't think is very good, but I put on the list anyway.
Perfect, because I actually put this one in my Discord. So this is High Noon, 2-mana enchantment. It says each player can't cast more than one spell each turn, and you can pay 4 and a red to sacrifice High Noon to deal 5 to any target. I like this card because it's like, it's a hate card, but you can turn it off when you want to. So you, it's like sort of one-sided until the turn that you want to start playing, and then you can kind of just say, here you go.
I mean, or you just hate out their strategy, then you kill them.
That too.
I mean, that's like, I think this card's cool. It's like, it's not a creature. Like, hate effects on enchantments are pretty good.
I mean, this is not an effect that people play in Pioneer right now, for example, against like Phoenix or something like that, like a deck that does tend to cast a lot of spells. But is that a possible place to bring this in? Like your sideboard, your Boros, you put this in on, you play this on like turn three after you've done some of your stuff, slow the game down, and then lava axe them with it if you have to go off again. Like, I don't know. Like that was the first place that I thought about it.
Yeah, I sort of feel like these are, if like a combo deck or like one of those, you know, stormy type decks ever gets in vogue, then you have this in your box to like bring out. You know what I mean? From the sideboard, where it's just like, oh, you want to cast like 15 egg spells and kill me? Well, you're not going to really get through this.
What I like specifically about this one compared to something like Deafening Silence is Silence has the non-creature clause on it. This doesn't. So you get into spots with Silence sometimes where on turn three, they can still just go shred or cantrip. And with this, they can't do that. Mm-hmm. And this also kills their Ledger Shredders, which is one of the best ways to get around Silence.
Aren't Silence effects also good against Lotus Field?
Yes.
And I just wonder if like something like this is actually useful for Lotus Field hate for a burn deck. We have Lightning Helix now. We have Boros Charm in Pioneer.
Oh, yeah. I'm down to burn some people. Let's do it.
Let's do it. High Noon, better than it looks at first, I think. Like, I think this is Don't Sleep On. By the way, I literally just realized that this says 5 damage to any target.
Yeah.
And not, when I read it, I assumed that it was 5 damage to target player because it looks like a lava axe.
No, that's great.
No, it's any target. Okay. That's way better than I thought it was. Okay. I'm going to read the next card because I'm going to keep it fast. Claim Jumper, 2 generic white rabbit mercenary. It's a 3/3 with vigilance. When Claim Jumper enters the battlefield, if an opponent controls more lands than you may search your library for a planes card and put it in the battlefield tap. Then if an opponent controls more lands than you, repeat this process once. If you search your library this way, shuffle. I like Knight of the White Orchid a lot. I think it's a cool card. I would like this card to be good, but I feel like the fact that the jump from 2 mana to 3 mana is huge, especially when you are, making a plan that's like, this is what I'm going to do when I'm on the play or on the draw. And I don't think that this gets there for that, but I would like it to get there. I mean, it's pretty cool if you're like, I have a white deck that I got to get to 5 mana, and this makes you get there pretty fast.
Yeah. I mean, this is close to making my initial list, but I just feel like these were typically like white commander deck plants because like they don't have I think they get more and more every year, but they don't have as many ramp effects. So, I mean, like you have to be behind your opponent or at least like on the draw, which is like why I don't love this, but
I don't think this card is getting commander, by the way.
I mean, I don't know.
I've been playing commander lately.
I mean, I don't know anything about commander. I just know that Knight of the White Orchid was important.
I don't know. I'm kidding. I have no idea. It doesn't seem powerful enough for commander though.
Two things real quick on this card. So one, I think it's kind of cool with specifically there's the 1 mana Field of Ruin, the one that you sack, you get a treasure, they search for a land. So you're down a land, but you still get the treasure back. And two, this can also get surveil lands. So it's not just basic planes. So maybe in like those white Yorion, Pioneer, 8/3 but Inspector, do nothing for 7,000 turns decks is good. But outside of that, probably not great.
Omen of the Sea. Okay. Requisition Raid. This is another card that I liked. This is another spree card. It is a spree card with a single white mana pip in the upper right hand corner. That's the casting cost, I suppose. That's how we'll describe it. It's a sorcery. It has spree. And the modes are plus a generic destroy target artifact, plus a generic destroy target enchantment, plus a generic put a +1/+1 counter on each creature target player controls. It's a mono white wear tear. I feel like it could be okay.
That's good.
Yeah, I think this card is good, and I think that even the fallback mode of putting a +1/+1 counter on each target creature you control for not a lot of additional cost is not bad, depending on what deck you're playing it in.
Is this better than Bovine Intervention, though?
Yes.
Which is 1 and a white instant, destroy target artifact or creature. Its controller makes a 2/2 ox token.
That card sucks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in on that card at all.
No.
Sorry to say. I think Get Lost is so much better than that card.
I just wonder if bovine intervention is a better disenchant, though, because tagging creatures is more important than the ability to tag enchantments.
But this is a 2-for-1, potentially.
Right. And the other thing, specifically, like out of the Boros Convoke deck, you have to be able to hit lockdown, and intervention not hitting lockdown is just, it's too bad. Like, you'd rather play Get Lost at that point.
Yeah.
I love it.
I think Get Lost is better. I think what's happened with Generous Gift, which is not a card that's legal in Pioneer, but is legal in Modern, is, you know, that's enough of a comp to Bovine Intervention for us to know that that kind of effect is, or Beast Within even, that's not a card that people play anymore, unfortunately.
Can we go back to Requisition Raid? Because am I not seeing something? Because this is literally just disenchant at sorcery speed.
No, what? It's Wear Terror.
No, it's not.
In a single mana. In a single mana color.
Disenchant is 1 and a white. Destroy target artifact or enchantment.
Yes, this is destroy target artifact and enchantment at sorcery speed.
And to put counters on your whole team.
Yes. Okay, so you could, in fact, cast it for 3 mana and 2-for-1 them.
Yes. Yeah. Or put counters on your whole team if you're playing.
Or cast it for four mana.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll concede this point.
I'm not positive that this card is going to replace. I mean, Wear Terror is like a long running sideboard card in Modern at this point, and occasionally in Pioneer. I'm not sure that this is going to totally displace that, because the instant speed thing is meaningful. But, you know, one mode of Wear Terror is that you have to cast it for 2 mana, and the other one is that you can cast it for 1 mana, or you can cast it for 3 together. This is similar to that. You know, you can still get that 2-for-1 for 3, and you get this kind of bailout thing with it, and it's a single color.
The only issue is, like, sorcery speed, like you said, versus Urza Saga is kind of tough, because you usually want to kill the Saga before the trigger goes off, so.
Yeah, yeah. I really wonder about this card in Modern, specifically. However, you know, it's a card that I guess you could see someone like Hammer try to play if they needed to in a certain metagame or something like that. It's also pretty good against Hammer, obviously, as well. But we have more powerful cards than that for Modern, so I don't know if it's quite at that level. But
yeah, I guess this is a good reminder for me. Like, I'm sort of looking at them as modal spells, and I really need to be looking at them, what I said in the intro, which is like, these are like sort of modal / split cards. And we have slash kicker cards.
They're called fuse cards, by the way. The ones that you could cast both halves are fuse. The split cards, you can't cast both halves.
Thank you, David.
So keep that in mind.
I appreciate that.
Someone has to stand up for Dragon's Mace. That's that's all I'm saying.
Okay.
All right, we talked about Bovine Intervention.
Stan? Yeah, can we talk about another spree card called Getaway Glamour?
Okay.
Okay. White instant spree. +1, exile target non-token creature returned to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step, or +2, destroy target creature if no other creature has greater power. To me, this is why split cards are interesting, is because they are modal and they do different interesting things. And I love the fact that, like, we have that white enchantment that also bounces a card if you channel it. I'm forgetting its name right now.
Oh, it's I know what you're talking about. It's the O-ring that will flicker a card.
Yeah. Oh, touch the spirit realm.
Touch the spirit realm.
You know, we see like these flicker fallbacks being good on other types of removal, and here this is an actual removal spell with the flicker fallback.
Yeah. The hard thing for me about this one, reading it, to be honest, is just destroy target creature if no other creature has greater power.
That's such a weird wording,
it's
you know?
It's a tough... You have to be happy. This is just one of those cards that's like, you get what you get with this card, right? Which sometimes is great and sometimes is awful. But
you can build your own removal spell by also flickering something else. That's how you get around the potential fallback of the second mode.
Yes.
So you flick your big guy and then kill their big guy.
Or you flicker their something guy and kill their smaller creature that's doing something to you that you don't like. I think this is a card that's probably going to be good and limited in this set. And but this one is very like on the fence for me.
It's a weird one.
Yeah. It might play out a lot more powerfully than it looks when you read it.
Okay. To me. You guys are unconvinced. Let me throw another one at you. Maybe more convincing.
Okay.
This is a creature. It's a human artificer named Oltec Matterweaver. 2 and a white for a 2/4. Whenever you cast a creature spell, choose one. You can either create a 1/1 gnome artifact creature token, or create a token that's a copy of target artifact token you control.
So many tokens.
A lot of tokens. I think this is designed to go infinite with something, or just like snowball in a big way in the right synergy or combo deck.
I don't disagree. And I looked at it. I look at all these cards, right? Because there's always like one of them every set, I feel like, right? Where it's just like, oh, this goes infinite. And my issue with this one is it costs 3, right? Like you just like, you're sort of just, it's really slow to get going. And there's a few cards like that in this set. I've got some later in the list where I'm just like, this is cool, but it just is going to take a while. And I feel like, you know, I started playing Magic again in cons with, like, you know, Monastery Mentor, right, you know, soon after that. And ever since Monastery Mentor, just, you know, costing 3 and being a 2/2 and taking a while to get going, it's just like these things sort of just keep happening to me where it's just like, this looks cool. And then it's like, whoa, because it costs 3 mana.
Felidar Guardian costs 4, my friend.
Well, there you go.
I mean, I think... Stan, I think without knowing the other card that goes with it, it's tough to be able to evaluate whether this is the one. You know what I mean? But I definitely think, yeah, this looks like an engine of some kind.
Oh, yeah. It's a cool engine.
Target artifact token. I guess this goes off with Academy Manufacturer, where like you're copying a treasure token that gets you 3 with Manufacturer. Then you use the treasure to do something else and cast another creature. I'm sure if there's anything that goes infinite, the answer is always Manufacturer, right? Like,
yeah,
that thing goes especially with modern. So
yeah,
I thought it was like Everflowing Chalice is the other way to go infinite. Oh, but it needs to be a creature. Then Walking Ballista. Yeah, right, I thought the other way to go infinite is with ballistas and hangerbacks.
Memnite.
I will say this does copy construct tokens, so I'm just throwing that out there.
It's pretty interesting. Thank
you. I'll catch it.
Okay.
All right, may I talk? May I talk? Have you friends heard the good news about the newt?
It's not good news, Shane.
Yeah, I don't know.
This card's cool.
You're gonna tell us.
Tell us.
Okay, it's a Archmage's Newt, 1 and a blue for a 2/2 creature salamander mount. Whenever it deals combat damage to a player, target instant or sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback until end of turn. The flashback cost is equal to its mana cost. That card gains flashback 0 until end of turn if it is saddled. Okay? So then, and it's saddle 3. I may have said that.
Uh-huh.
I don't care about the saddle cost on this. This is just like this is just value. I mean, it's not amazing. But like unsaddled, it's the floor is there. The floor does exist. It's not in the basement. It's on the ground level. And then I think beyond that, you can do some crazy crap. So
how do we feel about a Snapcaster Mage that you have to do damage to your opponent to make it work?
I mean, it's
obviously not as good as Snapcaster Mage, but like I see where Shane's head's at, where it's like I can imagine a scenario where you like cast this on 2, they don't kill it, and then you go like bolt your blocker, attack, flashback my bolt, target you. It's like you can kind of maybe see it, and you know it's obviously cheap cards like bolt or whatever, but I don't know, just 2 mana 2/2. Doesn't ETB do anything? I don't know. I'm not sold.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not selling myself on this. I just think that, hey, this is an interesting effect. I mean, I guess if I'm mentally comparing it to even something like that people have, what's that red card that tries to get stuff back for if its toughness is lower than its Arcanist? Toughness? Yeah, people have been trying to do Dreadhorde Arcanist stuff for like, you know, a couple years now and not really getting there. This is worse. You have to do combat damage.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when I look at this card, I go, who is going to try to break this with Enter the Infinite? You know what I mean?
But the fact that it can be
my language.
Any spell is flashback 0.
That's what I'm talking about. Shane, do you know what Enter the Infinite is?
I mean, I'm assuming it costs a lot.
It costs 12.
It says draw your deck.
Yeah, it says draw your deck. You have no maximum hand size until your next turn. It's 8 colorless, 4 blue. And it's like, it's a sorcery from, what is this? Gatecrash. And it's just basically like, pick up your deck, cast every spell on your deck. Like, I feel a little bit like that's slightly more likely.
Yeah.
You know, mill these cards in your graveyard, do the flat do, saddle it somehow. And
it's
then
clearly
really
not
abuse
good
it.
Enough for fair. It's not good enough for fair. You got to do the unfair.
But see, then there's no reason to not look at the saddle cost then, right? I don't know.
I don't disagree. I mean, that's just a car that exists. I have brought it up.
All right, let's talk about another card that exists.
Yes.
This card is crazy.
Okay, Devin.
Can we promise to each other right now we're only talking about cards that exist moving forward?
Yes.
Yes, 100%.
I do have my custom cube that I've been trying to get you guys to look at for a while. I don't know why you guys don't want to look at it.
Stop trying to sneak cards from your custom cube in our spoiler episode.
Okay, here's one. Duelist of the Mind. Figure out if it's a real card or from my custom cube.
I mean, this is Nathan Stoyer's card, so it's got to be real.
True. Who? Generic in a blue for a human advisor, flying vigilance. Duelist of the Mind's power is equal to the number of cards you've drawn this turn. Whenever you commit a crime, you may draw a card. If you do, discard a card. That's called looting. The ability triggers only once each turn. It is a star 3. Devin, you said this card is crazy.
It's my favorite card in the set.
I'm not seeing it. Please
this
tell
card's
me.
Good.
Please tell me.
All right. So, well, do you guys remember the RCQ that I won not too long ago with this Prof's Eidetic Memory? And the goal of that deck is to draw a lot of cards. You have Consider, you have Steam Core Scholar, you have Ledger Shredder, you have all these cantrips, and this just seems like absolutely absurd in that deck specifically. Now, outside of Standard, I don't know exactly what the context is, but I can assure you that this card is completely absurd in at least that deck specifically, and that's like where I'm going to spend a lot of my time, my focus on this card. Because like it's just you're not necessarily playing it for the second line of text as much as the first line of text, where if you have a bunch of cantrips, you just have like a 4/3 flyer or something like that.
Yeah, I think that the fact that this pairs well with cantrips, I think, is sneaky. And for that reason, I think it also like pairs well with other blue 2-mana flyers. Like, I like this plus Ledger Shredder. I like this plus the Fairy Rogue. Just having like things that you can do on 2 that are evasive and like can draw you cards and play in a play in an interactive deck that has ways to spend its mana when it's not interacting with like just instant cantrips potentially.
I mean, it's just value. You get paid off for doing the thing you want to do. You know, interacting with your opponent and their stuff, drawing cards. The fact that it only triggers once each turn is okay, but the fact that it scales infinitely is good.
Is this card broken if it triggers more than once a turn?
Quite likely. Meaning the card draw part.
I don't know.
It's just looting. It's not drawing.
I also don't know how often you're going to be triggering the commit a crime thing, right? Because, like, I mean, you could obviously play this with stuff like Fatal Push Thoughtseize, but I think the power level of this card mostly comes from the first line of text, where it's like, if you're being paid off for doing what you want to do, which is draw a bunch of cards. Also, imagine this with something like Treasure Cruise.
Yeah,
you
know, if you want to
step into Pioneer, it's like, it gets even more out of control.
I think that's where this is broken, is with Delve cards specifically.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like they took a little bit too much heat off this fastball. Like, they could have let it trigger. It also could have been a wizard. Like, why can't it be a human wizard instead of an advisor and let us wizard lightning some stuff in Pioneer? Like, come on. Like,
well,
give some hope to those people.
Nathan is advising the rest of, you know, us Magic players, because he's so knowledgeable. He's not a wizard. He's an advisor, you know?
Yeah. You're an advisor, Harry.
He's on Metafy.
Yeah. All right. Next card. Devin, you've convinced me more about the Nathan's. I mean, I never want to write off one of these world champ cards because they're, you know, they put a lot of work into these.
Because those world champs are going to come after you.
Yeah, exactly. Nathan has his own podcast. He could drop a diss track on us.
No.
Jace Reawakened, blue, legendary planeswalker. You can't cast this spell during your first, second, or third turns of the game, so you'll be dead in Modern. Draw a card, then discard a card. It's a +1 for that. +1, you may exile a non-land card with mana value 3 or less from your hand. If you do, it becomes plotted. And then -6 until end of turn. Whenever you cast a spell, copy it. You may choose new targets for the spell. Loyalty 3. People are talking about this card. I'm not totally seeing it.
This card sucks.
Why are they talking about this? Why are they talking about this card?
I don't know.
Okay, good. If you don't know, then I don't know.
People just want to do the Valky thing. But here's the thing, like people are imagining this with Valky and Pioneer. You can already cast Valky on turn 5. You just all you have to do is cast Bringlelight. You don't even need the Valky in your hand. And people still don't even do that much. You know, yeah. It's like Valky is just turn 5 Valky is not what it used to be.
I mean, I think people are talking about cheating this into play in order to do the Valky thing. And I'm like, this is a lot of parts of this recipe.
It's like a 17 card combo that only works on Tuesdays. Like, what are we talking about here?
Well, that's exactly when we have Modern Night in Chicago at Dice Dojo.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't see it.
None of us like this. Stanislav, any thoughts?
I mean, this. I don't know how to interpret a card like this with, like, a restriction. Like, the fact that it's a 2-mana, 3 loyalty walker seems pretty of this era of pushed walkers. Looking at something like Renin 6, for example.
This is how you interpret it.
Wow. Devin just threw another random magic card that didn't do anything to you, but he tossed it in the bin.
In the bin.
I just feel like the fact that they put this restriction on it suggests that they thought it was stronger than maybe we're making it out to be. Know what I mean?
I could be wrong. I guess the only place I wonder a little bit here is, like, does this have a place in the press the enemy living end version, like, deck in Modern, as just like another way to cast Living End when we're like outside, when we're, you know, without Violent Outbursts? It's turn 5, right?
So slow. That's my issue. It's like, it's just too slow, I think.
It's turn 5, yeah, because you plot it and then you get to cast it.
Yeah, because you can't cast the turn you plot it, so.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
that's why you're putting Leyline of Anticipation in your Living End deck, so that you can cast this on your opponent's turn 2.
Perfect. And Grief.
So okay, putting 12 unplayable cards in our deck, I see.
You can also cascade into this so that you can plot your the cascade cards you've drawn.
Well, exactly. If you play Shardless Agent and you cascade into this, you can't even cast it. You just have to stay exiled.
It does not get next. Around it.
Next.
Okay. Bye, Jace. We're some people are glad you're back. I am largely ambivalent.
I'll take the next one if you want to.
Please.
All right. Jerolf the Fleshright, 2 and a blue legendary creature, human warlock. Whenever you cast a spell during your turn other than your first spell that turn, you make a 2/2 zombie. And whenever the zombie's blue and black. Whenever a zombie enters the battlefield under your control, put a counter, +1/+1 counter on it for each other zombie that entered the battlefield under your control. It is a 2/3. I kind of like this one. It's given some Monastery Mentor vibes. What do you guys think?
I agree. I think this card is pretty cool. It seems like the best Monastery Mentor we've seen in a while, and it has the same mana cost. And, you know, the creatures stay big if they come into play, and, you know, Stan mentions here in the notes that it plays well with plot cards. I don't know if that matters in the formats that we mostly pay attention to. It might matter in Standard some more or something like that, but this card just seems pretty good with a bunch of, I mean, similar to what we were talking about with the Nathan card. It's like, if you're playing a bunch of cantrips, like, go off, make a bunch of zombies and come in, and they don't get small.
There's one plot card in particular that I think wants to live in the deck that plays a bunch of cards in one turn, and that's Slickshot Showoff, which I don't know if we want to talk about it now or later, but like, there's at least one plot card that I think we can share.
Can't wait to talk about that card, but let's wait until we get to red cards for that. Fine. Yeah. Okay. This card is pretty cool. We're not going to talk about it more than that.
I like it.
The one point I'll make that I think is interesting is that it's good for like a small storm payoff. Mm-hmm. When you can't like grape shot for lethal, just to like have a way to actually like chain a bunch of cards together potentially and do something better than empty the warrens. Like, I dig it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if like Monastery Mentor is really where you want to be in formats like Pioneer, but maybe this goes into the Standard version. There is a Mentor deck in Standard, so yeah. Maybe they want to play this card.
I mean, these are 2/2s. If you get 2, it's a 2/2 and a 3/3. They can block, unlike a lot of zombie tokens that when they do stuff like this. So I don't know. I feel like there's something here. All right, the key to the vault. Legendary equipment or artifact equipment. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, look at that many cards from the top of your library. You may exile a non-land card from among them, put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. You may cast the exile card without paying its mana cost. 2 generic and a blue. This card is like,
it's crazy,
very, very strange and interesting to me. It's a searchable combo piece with Stoneforge Mystic. If you wanted to take that equipment deck in a totally different direction and do some kind of broken payoffs with it. This is one of those things, Stan, where it's like, I don't know where this fits, but this card seems like something that will drive somebody's brewing juice.
No, this card's wild. The real problem is like, I'm already thinking, okay, well, how can you cheat the equip cost and make it even cheaper? Or how do you put this in your deck as well as the card that you want to, you know, cast for free or something like that, right? So there's a lot of things that have to go right, but going right is extremely powerful.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird to me because the cards that you would want to play this with is the Hammer package, right?
Yes. So
Stoneforge Mystic, Pure Steel Paladin, things like that. But it's like, you don't really want to play this in a Hammer deck because you don't have any good hits for it.
Yes, exactly. And so I'm like, what, do you put an Emrakul on there just for kicks?
Right. And you kind of also need some way to manipulate your library. Like, I don't know if there's ways to either put cards on top of your library or, like, I guess Vampiric Tutor in some sort of weird way. Maybe that's, you know, somebody can figure that out. But I see, it just seems to me that there's, like, it's a lot of mana and it's a lot of setup, and the payoff is there for sure. Like, you're casting cards for free. That's cool. But I just don't know how easy it is going to set it up.
It's not very easy to set it up, I'm sure. But I also think there's a chance that somebody's just like, you don't know what to play this with. I'm going to play it with Steel Shaper's Gift. You know, I don't think it's necessarily the Hammer package in full. Like, sure, maybe Paladin doesn't fit, but maybe Sigarda's Aid still does. You know, like, there's, I don't know. It just feels like a piece of some kind of new weird combo deck. But
yeah, I guess, like, if you put one Hammer on something and then this, you get to look at 10 cards. So that is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's doing stuff that no other card that I'm aware of is doing.
No.
I do think that we saw like an attempt at a powerful equipment value play with the Reality Chip, and that didn't really make the cut anywhere.
Yeah, but that's just that's like a JMD tome, right? That's why I don't think it's a value. I think you play this in a combo deck of some kind. I don't think it goes in a deck where you're going to search up your Pure Steel Paladin and cast it. You know what I mean? So that you have redundancy. I think this goes in a deck where you're like, oh, guess what? My payoff is I'm going to search up Atraxa and cast it. And I don't know how that works, but I feel like it could
somebody work. Will figure it out.
Yeah.
Not us.
Not us on this podcast right now. Definitely not me ever. I think Shane could do it.
I'm working on it.
Devin someday, maybe.
Stanislav, the next card's yours, isn't it?
It must be. I wrote the first note. Three steps ahead. It's an instant in blue. Costs a single blue to start the spree, and then its spree costs are one and a blue to counter target spell, so cancel. Then you have +3 to create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature you control, or +2 to draw two cards, then discard a card. You know, if we just put different modes on cancel, it'll be good enough. We saw that in Archmage's Charm, and this is just other modes. That's it.
Is this just Cryptic Command, though?
This is it's Lipstick Command on a pig. It's I don't think you can dress up a cancel all you want, it's still a cancel.
I disagree, Shane, little bit with that, because I do think Archmage's Charm is sometimes a good card. I do think Cryptic Command could be a good card again if it was in Pioneer. So maybe there's space for something like this, but I do think the analog here is kind of Cryptic Command, right? It's like Cryptic Command for 5. I'm going to draw two cards, discard a card, and cancel a spell. Devin has a pained expression on his face.
Mystic Confluence?
Yeah,
you guys know what that card is? 3 blue, choose 3, counter spell, draw, or bounce. It's like, I guess, like that, where you're paying 5 mana to counter a spell and draw 2, discard 1. I don't know. That's a lot of mana for a counter spell.
I mean, it's also Sublime Epiphany, right? Yeah. Like, this is basically choose one or more for 4 generic blue, counter spell, return a target, create a token that's a target. I mean, it's basically Sublime Epiphany, but you don't have to pay all six.
Maybe you're not playing it for cancel. Maybe you're playing it to, like, make an interesting token. You know what I mean?
I think that's definitely possible.
Yeah, maybe in some sort of like reanimator-ish adjacent thing where it's like you want the catalog, the draw to discard to put something in the graveyard to reanimate, and then you want the copy to copy your big reanimate thing. So yeah, that's a good point. Maybe you're just not playing it for the counterspell at that point.
Yeah, and it's like the counterspell is there if it's bad.
Yeah.
Or if you're in a bad shape.
It's like your get out of jail free card.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's move on to black. Shane, you had this card.
All right. I don't know. This is too many words to even bother talking about for how bad it is. Kerevec the Punisher, 1BB for a legendary human warlock, 3/3. Whenever you commit a crime, this is another Dreadhorde Arcanist wannabe. Whenever you commit a crime, exile up to one target black card from your graveyard and copy it. You may cast a copy. If you do, you lose 2 life. I don't know. I think too much actually has to line up for this to work. But it's like maybe a fun build around. I don't know. It's just you still have to pay for it. The more I think about this, the less I'm even remotely interested.
So you liked it at first, but now you're kind of off it.
I mean, I just kind of think about stuff that already exists and has failed or has mostly failed. You know what I mean? Like So much has to go right. This is a 3-mana card for 3/3. You have to untap with it probably, you know, unless you're casting it on turn 5 or casting a Phyrexian mana spell to exile a card from someone's graveyard. I don't know. Surgically extract something.
Yeah, I guess like Mishra's Bauble them, cast my Thoughtseize from the graveyard, pay an additional 2 life. Like, is that even good?
Can we talk about the free crime enabler of Mishra's Bauble or cheap crime enabler of Relic of Progenitus? Mm-hmm. You can just sort of like you can cast those early. You can, you know, leave them around for a while. Like those are cheap enablers, but this is not a payoff, I don't think, in modern especially. So
Hearse is another good one for the like quote unquote free enablers.
Stan, you have a note here that's interesting on Kerevec to me. That you say that there are sadly no plot crimes.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Are there no plot cards that target anything of your opponents?
I thought I noticed that all the plot cards are creatures or enchantments.
Wow, that seems incredible.
I'm
probably
positive
by design, right?
I'm positive that that's not true. Like, I'm looking at one now called Highway Robbery that is a sorcery, for example. So they're definitely not all creatures and enchantments. But fascinating if there aren't really any that are crimes, so to speak.
You know, by the way, just the quick aside, I don't know if we're going to have time to go over them today, but there are some banger reprints for Timeless in the set for like the bonus sheet or whatever.
Yeah.
Look at the bonus sheet. Set.
Yeah. For Timeless.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Reanimate, you're very interested in. I saw you said on Twitter, right?
Oh, yeah.
Next. So this is a card that I think is interesting that I'm almost positive is not good, but I used to love casting Gurmag Angler, and I think Talarian Serpent is a pretty cool card as well. And so when I look at Hollow Marauder, 6 generic and a black for a Spectre Rogue that says this spell costs 1 generic less to cast for each creature card in your graveyard. It has flying. And then it says when Hollow Marauder enters the battlefield, any number of target opponents each discard a card. For each of those opponents who didn't discard a card with mana value 4 or greater, draw a card. Okay, so if you are playing, you know, Stitcher's Supplier, or if you are doing Gurmaggy Angler-esque things, you get a 4/2 flyer that makes your opponent discard a card, and sometimes you get to draw a card off of it.
Actually, you know, I kind of like that you put this card in the list, because I was thinking about this one myself. And like there's some kind of Stitcher Supplier deck. I don't know what the rest of it looks like, but I mean, that sounds like a pretty good deal, right? 1 mana for a 4/2 flyer. I think if it didn't have flying, it'd be off it. But 4/2 flyer for 1 mana that, you know, just makes them discard and then whatever the rest is gravy. It sounds like it when you say it like that, it sounds like it could be interesting.
I also have some swampland in Florida I'd like to sell you.
I have that flyer for cheap mana if you know, something got damaged or died this turn.
Bone picker?
Yes, I have a bone picker for you.
Yeah. Look, I understand where you're coming from. I also think that the creature card in your graveyard is slightly harder to enable, right, than Talarian Serpent is. But it still felt like this creature was good enough. Like, the payoff was better. 4/2 flyer, they discard a card, sometimes you draw a card is pretty interesting swing if you can make it happen. So
yeah, if you can do it, like, you know, if you have enough fast enablers, you know, Stitcher Supplier, Seder Wayfinder, all these kind of like self mill stuff, if you can consistently do it on like turn two, turn three.
Yeah.
I guess turn two is pretty hard. So turn three is likely when you're gonna be able to do it, but I could definitely see it.
Yeah.
Maybe you can play this in the blue black crime card with Nathan Stoyer.
More flyers.
His looting fills the yard. Looting, this is also drawing cards to pump him up.
Oh, sure. I see what you're saying. I gotcha. Yeah.
I could see it.
Maybe.
All right. So that's just kind of my dark horse, like, common card that I saw that I hadn't seen anybody talk about yet. Lively Dirge. It's a generic and a black. It's a spree. So it has a high kind of base spree cost.
So we know it's good.
Yep. Sorcery. Plus one generic, search your library for a card, put it in your graveyard, then shuffle. Then the other one is plus two, return up to two creature cards with total manual mana value four or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. So this is an Entomb, and it's also a reanimate.
Mm-hmm. Why not both?
Or sometimes both.
Los dos.
If you're casting it for five.
I don't know. I feel like this card is kind of generically good.
Why is that?
What more do you want from an Entomb and a reanimate card than one that can do either or both?
For it not to cost this much, a sorcery,
and to cost this much,
I'm okay with it costing this much if it was an instant. But sorcery speed at this mana cost is like, I don't know. Like, imagine tapping out on turn three for this. You're not impacting the battlefield. You're just like, you know, there's a lot of matchups where you can't afford to do that. Like, you know, Boros Convoke or some sort of other aggressive deck. Also, total mana value four or less. It's like you want to be entombing for Atraxa, but then this isn't even the right payoff for Atraxa, right? So, because it actually can't reanimate Atraxa. So, I don't know. Interesting. It's more of like a small ball type of thing, where you want to get back, like, I'm trying to think, like, Mayhem Devil and, you know, that class of cards where you, like, entomb for Mayhem Devil or something. I don't know. I don't see it. It's tough.
Stan, you had an interesting note here about a card that you think could work for it.
Grief?
No, Grease Fang is more what I was thinking. I don't think this is close to sniffing Modern play, personally.
Yeah.
Because I think the two mana instant version of this that makes you get a non-legendary is actually just a better card, and so go get Archon, you know, but...
Yeah, I mean, you can maybe persist something, but yeah, this does Grease Fang.
Which I think is interesting if you're missing the piece, but...
I mean, when I play against Grease Fang and Pioneer, they just cast Grizzly Salvage, and that thing is Entomb all the time, so...
It's true. Grizzly Salvage also makes Hollow Marauder go. Right.
Now we're talking.
All right, well, we're convinced. Card's broken. Incredible and broken, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I got a spree
especially
card for
Shane.
You. Shane is the reanimate king of the show.
That's a good point.
He's the spree king on the show.
It's his favorite cube archetype, especially.
I mean, I do like reanimate, actually.
Shane, do you like Insatiable Avarice? B for a sorcery, spree, plus two, search your library for a card, shuffle the library and then put the card on top, or plus BB, target player draws three cards and loses three life. You can play it with Shieldred. You can...
I do kind of like
tutor cards. Devin likes it.
This one specifically I like. So, I mean, just even if you ignore like the search library for a card on top, just BBB, draw three, lose three. Like, we haven't, you know, we've seen obviously Night's Whisper and Sign of Blood and things like that, but draw three for three mana. It's basically, what's that card that people used to play in Standard in Zendikar? Painful Truths.
Painful Truths.
It's basically a monocolor Painful Truths. And like, what's nice about this, I mean, I guess Coffers decks in the past have played, you know, Night's Whisper or Sign and Blood to like combo, you know, wombo combo with Shieldred. But this thing, if you have a Shieldred in play, it domes them for nine, right? It's like that's half of their life total for three mana. Mm-hmm. And like this finds you the missing piece of your Coffers, Urborg stuff. I don't know. I just think it's a cool card in Coffers specifically.
Yeah, I'm a fan of this card too, actually. Even though it is a little bit costly just because of that trade between raw card value and searching something if you really need it. And the search cost, I mean, search a card for, or your library for a card, then shuffle and put it on top. Like, that sucks, you know, because it's like an 0 for 1, basically. But there are definitely games sometimes where you're like, I'm just going to get a thing. I got to get a thing. I'm going to try to do it. And I've got the mana, and in coffers in particular, you have the mana. So
right. And like, if you already have a coffers in play and you have, maybe you have a ring, you just like pay 3 mana, search for a Karn, tap the ring, draw it. You have enough mana with coffers anyways. So right. I think this coffers is.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
I think it's expensive.
Noted.
Stands Pitiless another Carnage card from you, I believe.
Yeah. Pitiless Carnage, 3 and a black for a sorcery. Sacrifice any number of permanents you control. Draw that many cards. Plot 1BB. And I think that this can sack any permanent, including lands, feels pretty good. Like, they want us to do something stupid and reckless, but painful to others.
Yeah, this card reads broken. I don't exactly know how to abuse it yet. The thing that kind of came to mind for me was, how do we generate enough like random game objects, foods, clues, treasures, bloods, that kind of stuff? That's kind of where my head went with this, where it's like, what is the fastest way we can do that? And I, again, as we talked about earlier, you know, the number one combo piece is Academy Manufacturer.
Yep.
Now, I don't know if there's something in Modern that you can do with that, but this card does play pretty nicely with Manufacturer. Might be a stew brew, and it's also black, which casts Asmo. Black anyways for Asmo, so
yeah, this is definitely a card that I looked at and I was like, I have
it's
no
gonna
idea.
Be broken at some point.
Maybe, okay, somebody might love this. It's not me, it's not for me though, but I definitely think it can happen.
Well, I sort of feel like this is one of those cards where when you cast it after you've plotted it and you're doing it for free, you're just winning the game on the spot.
Yeah, this is a card you look on the spoiler set and you're like, if 5 years from the road this card was banned, I wouldn't even be that surprised. You know, it feels like something that somebody's going to break at some point.
And I think we just did on the podcast.
All right, let's keep going into red.
Okay, I've got one, Magda the Horde Master. 1 and a red, 2/2 legendary dwarf berserker. Whenever you commit a crime, create a tapped treasure token. This ability triggers only once each turn. More importantly, sacrifice 3 treasures. Create a 4/4 red scorpion dragon, sweet creature token with flying and haste. Love those words. Activate only as a sorcery. Okay. Triggers on once each turn, yours or your opponent's. Doing crime things can happen on both of those very easily. And ultimately 3 treasures is like nothing.
It's
like
nothing.
You have like treasure engines and Magda and like interactive crimey spells or permanents that do crimes. I mean, there's cheap enablers like we talked about, like Relic, Bauble, things like that, Hearse. I don't think this is like...
Magdavan?
Yeah.
You don't get Ragavan in there?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think this is like some busted card, but I think like this is a build around. It could be a good one.
This card works well with the other Magda too.
Yeah, it's much more efficient than the other Magda too, right? I mean, it's 3 treasures is not a lot.
You also don't have to fill your deck with a bunch of dumb dragons that you can't cast.
True.
In this one, you just get to sacrifice things and make dragons with it. I was not a fan of this card when I read it yesterday, but you talking about it just now, I was like, yeah, maybe this is kind of like a little value payoff engine for like a red-black deck of some kind, maybe even in Modern.
There's that card that Spike likes too, the 2-mana 2/2 swashbuckler, EOT, make a treasure or whatever, if you descend it.
Spike likes every card, though.
Yeah. You know, Dave, you mentioned maybe this goes into red-black deck, and it just raised the question for me. When you guys are thinking about committing crimes with any crime card, like, how often are you going to Thoughtseize, especially? Like, versus Counterspell or Lightning Bolt?
I'm mostly going to Fatal Push and Lightning Bolt in my mind. I'm mostly going to removal spells, to be clear. But I think Shane has good notes here, too, when he's like, there's other things to remember. Like we talked about a couple times, Mishra's Bauble, etc.
Relic too.
Yeah. This card's a lot better than I thought looks a lot better than I thought originally. It's funny, like I think one thing to keep in mind though is like, how does this stack up against Inti, for example? Like, kinda think Inti's better. But
they're different. This card pressures a lot faster than Inti. Like the 4/4 haste.
Yeah. Inti does a lot more like valuey type stuff. So maybe it's like, hey, if you're trying to get more aggro, this is the way. But all right, next card, Shane.
It's just another hate bearer type thing. It's Magevane Lizard, 1 and a red for a 1/4. And whenever a player casts a non-creature spell, Magevane Lizard deals damage equal to that player equal to the number of non-creature spells they've cast this turn. I mean, I don't know if options like this exist in red already. but this is an interesting piece of hate in a single color. That's about it.
Okay. And then next up, Reckless Lackey, which is a card I don't think I understand enough.
No, I think
to be able to.
I don't think it's very good. I just think it's cheap and turns into a treasure, but then I look at it and it's terrible. So I barely want to talk about it. It's just a 1/1 Goblin Pirate for red, first strike in haste. It's a 1/2. You can pay 2 in a red and sacrifice it to draw a card and create a treasure token. So it's like, I don't know. We may have passed this by, but like I still remember playing mono red decks, you know, with 1/1s that sacrifice and deal 1 damage and ping something and them being perfectly serviceable. And this feels similar.
Is this the card you were talking about, Devin, that Spike likes?
No. The one from a previous set. 2 mana, 2/2. If you descend end of turn, you make a treasure.
Right. Okay. Yep. What do you think about this card?
It makes a treasure token, which helps you ramp into spree cards, which is Shane's favorite card type. So,
mm-hmm. Yo. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right.
We got to talk about the next card.
I'm reading this card. Right, this is my card.
Please,
Dave claims it.
Best card in the set, by the way.
You think this is the best card in the set?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay. Slickshot. Something else show
was the
off.
Best card in the set. I thought you said Nathan was the best.
Duelist
card.
Duelist is my favorite. This is the actual best card.
Yeah,
this
card's good. Gotcha.
Let's talk about why this card is the best card set. Slick Shot Show Off, generic and a red for a bird wizard. Look, they made this one a wizard. Flying Haste, 1/2. It's a 1/2? I thought it was a 2/1 for some reason.
No, it's a 1/2.
It's a 1/2. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, Slick Shot Show Off gets +2/+0 until end of turn, and it has plot, generic, red. And here we are again. Another set comes by, another 2 mana value, prowess, hope is happening, and we think it's the best card in the set.
Yeah, this card is daddy.
This is the best one we've seen so far, right?
I mean, this card is super sweet. Why is this card sweet? The reason it is because you can plot it on 2, cast it for free on 3 with a handful, with a board full of open mana and a grip full of hope, and get in and do some flying kill fiend stuff. Is that what it boils down to?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't this card potentially decent even without the plot? It's not good, but I think it's like serviceable. But with the plot, it's like, dang, this is quite good.
So big things about this, right? It's the fact that you have all the mana open. The +2/+0 is big, right? Like it scales a lot faster than other cards. Is that part of the reason that we think it's so good as well?
Yeah, it's just better than normal prowess. The other place that I really like this, so obviously, like you mentioned, it's a wizard, so that could be relevant for Pioneer with like Wizard's Lightning and things like that. And also, what's really sick about this specifically, like the place that I want to try this the most is in the Pioneer Heroic deck, because what you do is you plot it on 2 and then you cast it for free on turn 3. You maybe play like a cantrip or 2, then you've triggered this thing twice, base power of 1 plus maybe a pump or 2 that's attacking for 7, and you still have that extra mana to hold up the protection spell. And that's like the huge part about this, is you get to cast it for free and then do stuff and still hold up protection. So like, yeah, just like crazy with the wizard stuff. I think this is even good enough for modern, honestly. I think it's just better than Sprite Dragon.
I think it's better than Sprite Dragon too. I will definitely be trying.
We finally become better than Sprite Dragon.
Maybe. I will say, this is the thing that I thought when I saw this card, though, was Fugitive Codebreaker, We Hardly Knew Ye. That's what
Rest
I knew.
Rest in peace.
I was super excited about that card. I literally have 8 copies of that card because of what happened at MagicCon Chicago, and I forgot some cards when I wanted to play with it, and I had to go buy more, and Mickey from our Discord gave me some copies, and like, that it's just totally outclassed by this card right away.
Played 1 8-person event with Fugitive Codebreaker, and now we got all ready to retire it.
Yep. Okay. Well, maybe there's not more to say about it, but this is certainly the card that I'm most excited to play in the set. So,
same.
I have a question about this card, though. Doesn't taking turn 2 off in the decks you're describing also feel like a liability?
Well, here's the thing. So in the heroic deck, you kind of want to take turn 2 off in most matchups that have Fatal Push anyways, because like you don't want to just tap out for your 2-drop and get a Fatal Pushed. Like in Prowess specifically, it's different, where like, you know, if you're playing a blue-red Prowess deck and you have stuff like Mutagenic and Bauble, you're just going to cast this on turn 2 and then maybe trigger it once or twice, and that's fine. But in decks, like the plot is much more relevant in those decks that have protection spells. Or even like Spell Pierce in some matchups, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say too, is that this gives you the option, right? Yes. If you're playing against removal, you just plot it.
Exactly.
And hope that you have spell pierce in your hand. Because like, speaking in modern specifically, but
your opponent who's holding up mana, if they're holding up mana to kill your prowess creature, you're just time walking them if you plot this. They don't even get to use their mana. So that's huge.
I think there's a lot. There's could be a lot here. So
I love it. I love it.
All right. Stan, you got the next card?
Yeah. I'm excited about this one. I can't sleep over it. It's Calamity Galloping Inferno. 4 red, 6 mana, legendary horse mount, haste, 4/6. And its text is, when it attacks while saddled, win the game. I guess I'm adding subtext there, aren't I? What it literally reads is, choose a non-legendary creature that saddled it this turn and create a tapped and attacking token that's a copy of it. Sacrifice that token at the beginning of the next end step. Repeat this process once. So you're making 2 tokens. Yes. Terror of the Peaks says, bonjour?
Yeah, I mean, this card is costly, but interesting for that reason. So it's like, I don't know. This is another thing, almost like the sacrifice all these permanents to draw cards thing, where I'm like, or pitiless carnage, where I'm like, people are going to try to figure something out here, definitely.
It is kind of cool that you bring up Terror of the Peaks, which we didn't bring up on the list, which is a reprint, and I think a massive reprint, really big for Standard. And, you know, this thing is expensive, but you get what you pay for. I mean, it's a pretty powerful effect. And also, I like that it's an attack trigger and not a damage trigger, because, you know, 4/6 with no evasion would be kind of hard to trigger with a damage trigger.
Yeah.
But I like it. It's a good payoff.
Put in with a bunch of green cards to get mana early. Ramp into this. You don't have to do this on 6, you know. And you can play really good non-legendary creatures along the way that get you to this eventually. Into a combo finish, ultimately.
Could see it.
Yep.
Solved it.
All right, next up, we got some Splinter Twin. Green cards, Shane.
All right, I have a fake adventure card, just because I wanted to point this out. Aloe Alchemist, 1 green for a 3/2 with trample. When it becomes plotted, target creature gets +3/+2 and gains trample till end of turn, and then its plot cost is 1 green. So there you go. It's an adventure card.
Weird. But okay.
This is like the closest we get to plotting a crime, because you can target an opponent's creature. But even then, like, it's not the plot cast that does so.
I will talk about Bristly Bill, Spine Sower, 1 green for legendary plant druid, 2/2. Okay, this is just me complaining. So this card says landfall. They have specifically been avoiding using the words landfall on sets that don't have landfall. They have plenty of cards that have the ferocious text. It does not say ferocious. It just says if there's a creature with power 4 or greater. Come on, Watson.
But isn't there like some bureaucracy that landfall is like deciduous? I think that's the word they use. I think
they that's made it all deciduous.
Just make ferocious like deciduous. Okay.
I've been writing them letters and they won't answer them.
Okay, the landfall says whenever a land ETBs, put a 1/1 counter on target creature. It also has a ability, 3 green, double the number of +1/+1 counters on each creature you control. So it's cheap. It has a decent little landfall trigger. It does work in scales or other scaly type things, of course. And then the late game is a huge payoff, but this is probably not a legitimate super powered card.
You never have 5 mana in scales.
And I'm not saying modern well, in scales. Modern. I'm not saying modern I'm just scales. Kidding. I'm just saying this is a thing that exists. It's a card that isn't printed.
Yeah. I think in Pioneer scales it could maybe do something. Just like, you know, landfall put a counter on stuff is a pretty big text box. Like that ability is massive.
Oh, that's cool. I like it.
Bristly Bill.
It's bristly. I've got another green one that I think is neat.
This card I think is a huge flashy card.
Cracked.
Yeah.
This card's sweet. Colossal Rattleworm. 2 green, 6/5 worm. It has flash as long as you control a desert. It has trample. And then it has, for some reason, 1 green, exile it from your graveyard, search your library for a desert card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle.
It casts Rampant Growth once they kill it.
It's a 4 mana, 6/5 flash worm with trample. All you gotta do is play a desert. Get your Hashep Oasis's out, my friends.
Oh, yeah. Good card.
I sold them.
You got money for them?
Yeah, from a bulk buyer. Gives me $5 per bulk.
Green is not super good in standard, but if anything is going to make green good in standard, it's a 4 mana, 6/5 flash. Like that alone, even if it had no other text, is kind of messed up. I like this card.
I think it looks fun.
Can we do some green stompy in Pioneer with this card?
Maybe.
I'm not going to stop you, David.
Hashship Oasis is good.
Hashship Oasis is good. Guess what else is good? Llanowar Elves. Yeah. Or Elvish Mystic or whatever.
I mean, these decks have like existed.
3, 6, 5.
Yeah, they've existed, and this is one of the biggest payoffs that the deck had.
It's really good.
I don't know. This card's cool. Why it exists, I don't know. My, like, 15-year-old me would have been like, what? What? This is, like, the most power creep card compared to cards from 20 years ago. It's absurd. All right, let me talk about a card people hate. Smuggler's Surprise for green. It's an instant. It's a spree. All right, so the spree starts with green, I guess is how we're going to phrase this. This one says, for +2 generic mill 4 cards, you may put up to 2 creature and or land cards from among the milled cards into your hand. +4 generic and a green, you may put up to 2 creature cards from your hand onto the battlefield. +1 generic creatures you control with power 4 or greater gain hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. I have seen some very polarized takes about this card online. I am not a Titan person. No one on here, this podcast, is a Titan person, but I have seen people talk about trying this out in Titan as a way to get around subtlety, for what it's worth, and just potentially be able to dig, give indestructible, yada, yada, yada. I don't know. It seems like it's got some powerful stuff going on. I know that it's very close to the cost of entwining Tooth and Nail when you really get into all of this stuff, but it's at instant speed, which is interesting.
Yeah, I'm not a Titan expert, but I mean, like you said, I could see like just 6 mana if people are boarding, if people are overboarding on subtleties for you, if you just have this plus Titan in hand, it's kind of cool. You can also just like 2 mana give your Titan protection if they go to have a Leyline Binding or something, because it's hexproof and indestructible, so it gets around all the removal spells.
Yeah.
It's also 3 mana. You can look for creatures land, so not artifacts, but you can still get sagas with it, which eventually finds amulets. So there's a lot going on here. I don't know. I'm not a Titan expert. I know nothing about that deck, but it could be worth trying.
I think it could be an interesting sideboard card, and there that gives them a little more play. But
is the 6 mana put 2 creatures from your hand on the battlefield at instant speed? Like, I feel like that's got to be good outside of Titan. Like, that just, you can put anything on the battlefield. You can put Eldrazi on the battlefield.
Draxa, Gristlebrand,
Calamity, anything. That horse, the horse god.
Even the horse.
With Terror of the Peaks.
Yeah. Oh,
Terror of the Peaks and the horse guy. Woo! We're cooking.
Thing. I mean, I guess this only costs 6. Tooth and Nail is 5 generic green that says, search your library for up to 2 creature cards, reveal them, put them in your hand, or put up to 2 creature cards from your hand onto the battlefield and has entwined 2. So if you cast it for 9, you get to search and put 2 creatures onto the battlefield, and that's legal in Modern. But this is cheaper.
Not an instant either.
And it's not an instant, yeah. So I don't know. I think this card is powerful, though.
Yeah, this looks really cool. And it's spree, so you know it's good.
Yeah.
Right, Shane?
If it's spree, it's me.
All right, Stan, what's this next card?
Railway Brawler, 3 green for a Rhino Warrior with reach and trample, 5/5. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, put X-1/1 counters on it, where X is its power. You can also plot this for 3 and a green. This card is pre-selling for $30, which Commander means is good.
Commander.
Yes. My notes do indicate it is likely a snowbally commander card, but maybe it's a snowbally card in other formats too.
Like limited.
Like, I mean, it's got plot. You can $30 cast it limited for free cards when doing something later. I feel like all the plot cards are worth special attention just because it's such a powerful effect. And this is a slow 5/5 for 4 that you can like pair with another creature immediately. Maybe a hasty creature, the horse god.
Or a rattlesnake, perhaps, that comes in as a 12/11 if you do this.
This plus the horse plus Terror of the Peaks.
Yeah. Oh, you this did it. You broke it.
The 6/5 flash. You like, you plot this next turn, you play it, cast the 6/5 on their turn, you make a 12, I don't know.
12/11. That's what I'm saying. The rattle worm or whatever it is.
I mean, I think this card is maybe good enough for standard. Outside of like in that green hypothetical green deck that we're talking about, but outside of that, I don't see it.
Yeah, maybe.
What about on a Skelemental?
Now you're just memeing.
Too deep. Little too deep.
A 12-7.
Guys, I'm just trying to have fun with new cards. If not now, when?
I definitely stopped and looked at this card, and I was like, "Wow, that's a lot on that line of text," and then kept going. What else do we like in green? Anybody got anything else they like in green?
I got two more real quick here. Quick hits. Okay. Ornery Tumblewag, 2 and a green Brushwag mount. At the beginning of combat on your turn, you put a 1-1 counter on target creature, and whenever it attacks while saddled, double the number of counters on target creature. Saddle 2, it is a 2-2. I don't know, this thing, you know, we were talking about like the Pioneer Scale stack. I don't know if this is maybe good enough for Pioneer Scales. Saddle 2 is pretty easy in that deck. It's playing a bunch of 2-2s anyways. And I don't know, just like loading up on a big Stone Coil Serpent attack, double the counters on the Stone Coil that you're already getting bonuses on. Could maybe do something in Pioneer Scales.
Saddle is so tough for me, because I'm just like, why doesn't it just get like +1/+0 when it's saddled or something? You know, like no, it doesn't change what the creature does itself. So if you're like, I'm going to send this 2-2 in, it'll die, but my Stone Coil Serpent is a 10-10 now. Like, that seems pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like you're probably only going for a big, like a lethal push kind of thing, where you saddle it with some small, medium creature, you hit with this, double the Stone Coil, and that's like a lethal attack. You don't care if this is dying in combat. Which, you know, maybe will happen.
I think it's important to consider saddle from a flavor perspective of like Calvary rules. You know, it's just think of a knight on a horse. Like the horse isn't better because the knight's on it.
Wait. What are you talking about?
Like
that's exactly the point I'm making, though, is that the horse is better with the knight on it than it is by itself.
No, this is a Mantis Rider situation. The rider is the person on the mantis.
Oh boy.
This is terrible.
We're going to have this conversation with me, so we don't have time for that.
Stan, I'm not into this. It should be if the knight is on the horse is a 4-2, not that it stays a 2-2.
No, cuz the horse is better with or is good with or without the knight, but the knight needs the horse to be
the horse
good.
Doesn't have a sword. The horse doesn't have a bow and arrow. What are the you talking about?
The horse doesn't know it's at war.
That's why it has more power when the person's there, because otherwise it would leave.
No, the person just gives a direction.
No.
Okay, well, we'll let the voters decide.
Okay.
That was Ornery Tumbleweg. Last green card, real quick here. Trash the Town. Green instant spree.
Okay, so it's perfect.
Green plus. +2, put 2 +1/+1 counters on target creature. +1, target creature gains trample until end of turn, and then +1, until end of turn, target creature gains, whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player, draw 2 cards. I don't know if there's any sort of green heroic-y type decks, but 2 mana to draw 2 cards, maybe. Even if you're not using the other modes on it, which is all gravy, just, I don't know, 2 mana draw 2 doesn't sound that bad, right?
Yeah, this was close to making my initial list. I think it's pretty good too in green, just like the floor being 2 mana draw, go for it.
It's definitely possible to make a Naya heroic deck for sure. Yeah. And just think about something like what if you play this with Feather, you know, like that used to be a card that we played in Pioneer and now we don't anymore. But yeah, I'm talking we're playing Naya Feather and we're drawing 2 cards every turn. Yeah. I could be into that. I did not see this card in the spoiler. This card is sweet, I think, for a bunch of dumb reasons. But
if you want to put great in your Hoic deck, you got a good reason now.
Yeah. All right. We are closing out on the time here. What are some multicolor cards that we like?
We've got so much time. We're doing one episode. We have to make it long. I think we don't know the name of this card as of at least when I did the spoiler notes.
Crispy Crab.
The Scryfall calls it Crispy Crab Akul. It's black, black, red, red for a Scorpion Dragon Rogue. I love all those keywords. It has flying. It has trample. It's a 5/5.
This card is called Akul the Unrepentant.
No, it's Crispy Crab Akul. Thank you.
We're going to call it Crispy Crab.
So that alone, okay, not really playable. But Shane, you're asking me what else is there? Sacrifice 3 other creatures. You may put a creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. Activate only as a sorcery and only once each turn. I'm fine with that. This is abusable on rate, it's adequate. This is a fun build around. It is not going to break anything. It is a fun card, and I'm allowed to think about having fun now and then.
That's all I've ever wanted.
That's all we want. Yeah.
Seriously.
Great. Love it.
This card's cool.
I mean, it's a cool card, right?
Four mana 5/5 flying trample's not that bad.
That's not bad, right?
And like, even the turn, if you have stuff in play the turn they go to kill it, you're still going to get some big idiot if you have it.
When I started playing Magic again in like World Wake, you know, Alara Block, like Alara Block
and stuff,
that's what I'm thinking of. It's like they had this card, but it was like if you play this wrong, because it was a 4-mana 6/6 flyer, and now we have a 5-mana. Four mana 5/5 flyer that has no drawback. Like, okay.
Upside.
It's all upside.
Different times, folks. Different times.
I do not want to sound like Power Creep guy on this episode, but there's a few things here that are very hilarious on rate.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Okay, let's talk about this next card, Dave, because I think this card's bonkers.
I love this card. Assimilation Aegis. It is a generic, a blue and a white, or a white and a blue, depending on how you want to read it. It is an equipment, and it says when Assimilation Aegis enters the battlefield, exile up to one target creature until Tilde leaves the battlefield, because I'm not saying that phrase over and over again. Whenever it becomes attached to a creature, for as long as it remains attached to it, that creature becomes a copy of a creature card exiled with it equipped to. This card is sick. This is like, I'm going to search up a removal spell with Stoneforge Mystic, and then probably do some other weird stuff with it on top of that.
Yeah, it's sweet.
It's got no power and toughness bonus, of course, but it's like, I don't really care, because I think maybe even half the time when you play this card, you're not going to care that you're not going to bother to equip it to anything. You're going to be like, whatever, fine. I just am using it as an O-ring that I searched up. I got rid of a problem, and I'm moving on.
Imagine boarding us in against Primeval Titan as the hammer deck, and you like get there, you get their Titan, untap, equip, and then attack and search two Urza Sagas. Like, that sounds nice.
That does sound good. I don't know. I think this card is just very good.
Yeah, it seems like every Stoneforge deck just wants to play. If you're playing blue, then you're going to have one of this in your Stoneforge package for sure.
I mean, I think that this is the type of card where this might be the only blue card in your hand. If you're mono white hammer, you might have some way to get a couple of blue mana so you can just play this card, and that's it.
They've done it before.
Yeah, it's worth it.
And of course, you can cheat it into play with Stoneforge anyway, so maybe you only need a couple sources, but also gets rid of your opponent's, what am I thinking of? The indestructible card.
The one
Culture ring? Complete. No, it gets rid of your opponent's Culture Complete.
Although, if you equip, that's not going to work out the way you want it to.
Wait, why?
Because it's a 0/0.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, you just so get rid of it.
You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I got another multicolor card. Can we just talk about how multicolor in this set is bonkers, by the way? There's like 51 yes. multicolored cards in this set. They're like from all these random planes. It is buck. So Doc Orlok, isn't he from Spider-Man? Grizzled Genius, green and a blue, 2/3 legendary bear druid, my favorite. Spells you cast from your graveyard or from exile cost 2 generic less to cast. Plotting cards from your hand costs 2 generic less to cast. Abusable cost reduction, low entry cost, not even bad on its face. I'm fine with this card.
There's going to be something to do with this. I mean, the immediate thought to me was Underworld Breach, but like, if you're playing Breach, you kind of want to play a bunch of cheap cards anyways, so it's like, how much do you get off the discount for that? So, I don't know. It's hard to figure out where it goes, but it does seem pretty powerful.
Yeah, this is definitely a what's the home, but yeah, this is abusable. All right, I guess. I mean, I did a lot of these. There's not a lot that's like, I think, worth focusing too hard on. Girid, Mirror of the Wilds, Naya, Haste, 3/3, Legendary Human Shaman. Non-token creatures you control have tap, create a token. That's a copy of target token you control that ETB'd this turn. Probably Commander, interesting effect. Probably too slow to get going, but...
I was listening to what you were saying, and I still don't know what it does.
I mean, you have to make it. I mean, here's the thing. I actually kind of overlooked that it said target token you control at ETB this turn. So this is probably nothing, but it could be something.
Or it's very something.
Yeah, it's
where you're just going to like make 40 copies of something.
It's cool. Intimidation Campaign, 1 blue black enchantment. When it ETBs, each opponent loses 1 life. You gain 1 life and you draw a card. Whenever you commit a crime, you return it to its owner's hand. I just want to point out this is a fun disinformation campaign callback, and people did stuff with that card. It was not necessarily good stuff, but it was, in fact, fun stuff.
This is easier to trigger than disinformation. Yes,
that's
campaign.
The thing, too. So, it's cool. I mean, you could do something with this. You could do something.
It's broken and limited.
Yes.
That's what I was going to say. It's pretty limited-y, especially if you find something that can target somebody over and over again and limited, like the thing that targets their... there's something that targets their graveyard. Tomb Trawler. Put target card in the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's only yours. So I think there's some cards that can make this really broken, though.
I feel like we have to talk about Oko a little bit. Is Oko good?
Do you ask?
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, we don't really have a lot of time. People know what Oko does.
It's hard. Probably. It's hard to know if Oko's good anymore because the first one set the curve too high.
The bar is a bit high. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to think of Oko as another planeswalker. Like, what if the name of this planeswalker was just like John the Ringleader? Then would we think it was good?
No,
we wouldn't. Two cards.
We'd be like, get John out of here.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Get John from Cincinnati out of here.
Man, I was going there, David, and you beat me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to talk about one card that also starts with O, just to go what?
Okay.
Which is Obika, Splitter of Seconds, one, and then Grixis for a 2/5 menace. Whenever Obika, Splitter of Seconds deals combat damage to a player, you get that many additional upkeep steps after this phase. I literally have no idea what this card is for or who Commander. It's for. I got to assume it's a Commander thing, but I don't even know who in Commander wants extra upkeeps. I just wanted to recognize this is probably the strangest Magic card I've seen printed in 4 years in a standard set.
Look, Dave, you know there's that one person listening to this episode with their upkeep stop Commander deck, and they're like, man, I cannot wait to play this card, and you just ruined their dreams.
Yeah, Illusions of Grandeur, Commander, or something like that. Yeah, Illusions of Commander.
We do have an actual good card.
Yes, I don't know why we don't start with the good cards.
No.
I think you're right.
It's more fun to make people listen for an hour and 45 minutes.
Because they know we're going to eventually talk about it, you know?
I don't know if I agree this card is good, but go ahead.
Sam.
Satoru the Infiltrator, blue and a black for a legendary human ninja rogue. It has menace. It is a 2/3. When Satoru and or one or more other non-token creatures enter the battlefield under your control, if none of them were cast or no mana was spent to cast them, draw a card. There's a lot of ways to draw cards when Satoru's on the board, and that's why he's interesting. There's just like whether you're evoking elementals, whether you're bringing stuff in with an Aether Vial, maybe you're ephemerating, maybe you're dredging creatures in. Like, there's just so many ways to draw cards with him. So it's nice to have that flavor in the soup. That's all I've ever wanted to say. It pairs with ninjutsu, and he's a ninja.
Perfect. That's a good point. No.
I mean, I totally agree. I don't know if this adds enough to any of the particular soups to warrant its slot, but I do think that it's interesting how many different things it synergizes with if you really start looking at all the effects that make this trigger.
Yeah, I mean, this is an Aspiring Spike card.
And it does not say... only triggers once
each
turn. Yes,
that's
the only card in the entire set that does that, by the way.
Right.
That's the key.
You know, I don't think this card is completely, I don't think it's completely unplayable, but my issue with, my biggest gripe with this card is the comps to Up the Beanstalk, right? Up the Beanstalk was not legendary, so you could stack them. It was an enchantment, so it's arguably harder to kill. It's not gold. It was green. This is a gold card. So it's like, I don't get the Beanstalk comps. Maybe this card does something cool, but I just don't see it being a super competitive card. Like, it is just a 2/3 and you have to put, you know, I don't know. It's just like, they can kill this thing in response. You don't get the trigger. Like, you got the trigger with Beanstalk, even if they countered your Fury or whatever, you still got the trigger. So
right.
There's a lot of things about this card that make it a lot worse than Beanstalk. So don't, you know, be slow down on the Beanstalk comparisons.
I was just going to say, I think that this is a card that will be a card draw engine in one specific deck. And it's one deck that we won't understand until it shows up. And it's going to be like, It's going to be like Goryeo's Vengeance or something that's going to be like, we're playing this card to draw a card off of a track, an extra card off of a track. I'm just making this up. You know what I mean? Where it's like, it's going to fit into some dumb deck that just because there's some deck that doesn't have a two drop that's better than this. But I don't think it's going to be as powerful as, yeah, Up the Beanstalk or anything like that.
I mean, particularly in the Goryeo's comp, or the Goryeo's comp is cool because they get to play two elementals. They get to play Solitude and Grief and Ephemerate. Like, Ephemerate with this thing goes hard.
Yeah.
Right? Where you cast the Grief, draw a card, Ephemerate, draw a card, upkeep, draw a card after the Ephemerate. So, like, it does go pretty hard with Ephemerate with those two elementals. That's the one spot I could see it in.
It also comes in with, if you Goryeo's Vengeance something and it's on the board, you'd get a draw trigger off of it because it comes into your control. Right. You didn't spend any mana on it. So
you guys are pointing out more ways than I've listed at this point. Like, you're just making a stronger case.
I just think that it's, I mean, I don't know. It's a cool card. We'll see. We'll see where it lives.
It's moving into your house, David. That's the thing. Like, it needs a place to stay.
He looks tidy.
A spare room in the basement.
Satoru, there's plenty of room for you around, especially if you can help keep the house clean with me. All right. What else do we want to talk about here?
I put three on here. I really only want to talk about the first one, though, because I was kind of surprised that you guys didn't have this on the list initially. It's
Almost added it, Devin. Yeah.
Okay. Pillage the Bog, which is black and a green for a sorcery. It says, look at the top X cards of your library, where X is twice the number of lands you control. Put one into your hand and the rest in the bottom in a random order, and you can plot for one, a B, and a G. If you plot it, even if you just cast it on turn two, it's just sorcery speed impulse. And then it just scales from there, right? Turn three, you look at six. Turn four, you look at eight. And like, even once you're getting to six, it's pretty dang close to a Demonic Tutor. And then once you get to like four lands and you're looking at eight cards, it's like, you know, what board do you want at that point? The plot, I don't know if the plot is super relevant on this, where it's like, you don't want to wait until turn three to do it. And then turn four, I guess you get to cast it for free and then find some spell off of it, but I like this card a lot.
I think the big thing with that is that the stuff that's hard about Demonic Tutors is wanting to be able to like cast them the turn that you search the card up, right? And so I think that's what they're trying to set up with the plot there, is you go get the card and you get to play it immediately, which you can't do generally if you spend the black and the green for it. But it does feel like the casting is off a little bit. Yeah, I think this card is potentially super powerful, right? But it takes a while to get all these lands into play.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to wait till turn four for it, which I guess the plot does make sense in that, where it's like, if turn four is the perfect turn to cast this, you plot it on three, cast it for free on four, and then the world's your oyster. You're looking at eight cards, like, you're going to find what you need at that point.
You're going to find Shieldred, and you're going to cast it for four. Right?
True. Probably, or the One Ring.
Either one. The only card that I wonder about a little bit with this one is, I can't remember the name of the card, but there was a black card in Ravnica, Guilds of Ravnica Arrow that was like, go get a black card out of your deck.
Oh, with Undergrowth. Yeah, the Undergrowth. I don't remember the name of it, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, where I was kind of like, is this card better than that? I don't know. Maybe it is.
That one counted black cards in Graveyard, I think, or something.
Yep, that is what it did.
Yeah,
it's a weird anyway. One.
That's all I got. The other two are like medium standard players, but we don't need to spend time on those.
Okay. All right. Do we need to talk about any of these artifacts or lands?
I mean, Lavaspur Boots is good, isn't it?
Well,
Lavaspur Boots, one generic, equip one, gets +1/+0 and has haste and ward one.
Oh, this one.
Whenever it becomes a target, I mean, it seems good. Maybe not.
People like it.
It's good.
I mean, Urza's Sagaable way to give haste opens up a lot of stuff for Urza Saga decks. Like, specifically, even just baseline, right? That turn, the third chapter, whatever, you make the construct, they kill the first one, and then you go untap, make the second one, go get this haste. They weren't expecting the second one to be able to attack because they killed the first one. Mm-hmm. So it's like sick there. It seems insane in Hammer, right? Where you just have like the threat of always having a haste creature if you have a Sigarda's Aid. Like, they have to play so scared the entire time. I just think it opens a lot of potential opportunities with Saga.
Here's what I want to say. When I looked at this, it did not cross my radar that Swiftfoot Boots is 2 mana.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the first that we've ever seen Saga book.
That's 1 mana. Right. Yeah, exactly. So that's something to keep in mind for sure. Okay. I'm more in this card than I was a minute ago for sure.
Yeah. I mean, there's a desert. It's fine.
Yeah, people are excited about Botanical Sanctum and all of that thing being in standard. I think that's great.
Those are big.
Sweet. I can't believe we did this. We got basically, I didn't really skip that much, and we did it in 2 hours.
We talked about every card in the set. we just cut out a lot of them from the episode in the final copy.
Yeah.
So people will just hear the hits. And believe me, these are the hits.
All right, favorite card. As we're getting out of here, what's everybody's favorite card?
Oh, boy.
Devin, you first.
Favorite card, Duelist in the Mind. Card I think is the best is the 1-2 Flying Haste.
Yeah. Anybody disagree with that?
I have a different favorite card.
Okay.
Calamity Galloping Inferno.
Oh, wow.
Favorite okay. card. Slickshot Show Off, probably the best card.
Yeah. I'm obviously into Slickshot Show Off. I think other than that, I don't care. Oh, I guess the other card that I like is the Aegis, probably. That's probably my other card that I'm interested in playing.
I don't have what a favorite card.
Okay.
Weird.
Shane's favorite card is all the Spree
cards. Yes, Spree.
Yeah. Favorite mechanic. What do we think could be the impact on Pioneer? Like, so this set comes out on April 19th. Pioneer RCQ season kicks off, I think, either that weekend or the one before. Like, what's week one?
I mean, Slickshot is definitely the card that is priced to move the most in Pioneer. Past that, maybe Duelist. There might be a Pillage deck where just like, I don't know what it looks like, but some sort of five color ish soup value deck. Like, that card is kind of decent in Niv, right? Where you just like plot it on 3, cast it on 4, go find Bring the Light or whatever, cast it, stuff like that. Past that, I don't know. There doesn't seem like there's a ton here. Question mark?
Seems reasonable.
I'm going through looking at it again. I'm not seeing a ton here.
We're not seeing a ton, Jerry.
Stan.
Shall we wrap?
Yeah, I think in interest of not destroying whoever has to edit this episode, this is the moment.
That wraps up this week's show. If you haven't yet, make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you get the latest episodes as soon as they come out. And if you use Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and review. You can also do that on Spotify. If you'd like to submit a question to the podcast or just reach out in general, you can tweet us at TheDiveDown, all one word, or email TheDiveDown@gmail.com. If you'd like to support our show, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/TheDiveDown. You can also check out TheDiveDown.com/store for some really cool stuff. If you'd like to support Devin, you can do that on twitch.tv/DoomWake. Doom is spelled with zeros. I'm sick of repeating it, okay? But it's how you spell Doom. It's how he does it, at least. Head over to HeavyPlay.com to get some incredible deck and dice boxes and playmats featuring their Equip Mag system. Use promo code TheDiveDown2024 to get 10% off your first order. Also, shout out to ManaTraders.com for sponsoring The Dive Down. Sign up for ManaTraders using promo code TheDiveDown_K4L. One word. 10% off your first 2 months of renting Magic Online cards. As always, special thanks to the bands Nowhere and Spaceblood for letting us use their music. And until next week, get out there and pew, 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 pew at Thunder Junction.